In the wake of last weekend's mass shootings, there have been renewed calls for gun control measures on both sides of the aisle, but it's unlikely that the Senate will pass any legislation. 90.5 WESA's Lucy Perkins sat down with Congressman Mike Doyle. The Pittsburgh Democrat supports sweeping gun control measures. He expressed frustration with Senate Republicans, including Pennsylvania's Pat Toomey, who say there isn't enough Senate support to pass background check legislation.
I don't know what it takes. We've seen this tragedy in Pittsburgh. It's hit us. It's everywhere. And the Senate owes the American people at least to put themselves on record and say where they stand on these things. I personally would go a lot further. I don't believe military weapons should be sold to civilians. If that shooter in Dayton had a handgun or a hunting rifle, he couldn't have shot 43 times in 30 seconds. It's just not possible. No one's talking about taking away people's hunting rifles or even a handgun, but these weapons that allow you to shoot 100 bullets without reloading, what's the civilian purpose for that? You know, people are selling these bulletproof book bags now for their kids. What do you tell a five-year-old when they're going to kindergarten that we're giving you this book bag, but, you know, if a shooter comes, you got to put it in front of you? I mean, what is that doing to young people's minds? I don't want to live that way, and I don't think most Americans want to live that way. But it's going to take some courage on the part of some elected officials who, from whatever reason, are more afraid of gun manufacturers and the NRA than they are with their constituents they can home. And I think that's terrible.
Many have linked the manifesto believed to be written by the alleged shooter in El Paso to President Trump's rhetoric, his anti-immigration rhetoric. To what extent do you think that the president bears a responsibility for something like this?
Words matter, and especially when those words come from the President of the United States. The use of the term invasion, when he talks about people invading the country, that stokes up images in some people's minds, especially some people who are filling their minds with other hate rhetoric, that somehow it's their duty to somehow stop this invasion, that these people are coming to harm us. And, you know, that kind of rhetoric has consequences. At one of the rallies, he talked about an invasion. How do we stop it? And someone in the audience yelled, "Shoot him!" And people laughed, and he laughed. I mean, really? What kind of message is that sending when the president talks that way? And we recently heard President Obama basically said that as leaders, we have a responsibility to not use the kind of rhetoric or language that incites people's worst behavior or that pits one group of people against another group of people. And you can't go in front of a press conference when a tragedy happens and talk about unity and then the next evening tweet something out on Twitter that divides us again.
You are being challenged in this 2020 primary, this upcoming primary, by Gerald Dickinson. He's a law professor at the University of Pittsburgh. Something that he says is that the district that you represent is more progressive than its current representation. And in this current political climate, Pittsburgh should be a louder Democratic voice. Well, how do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, I don't have opponents yet. And there's three people that I've read that are interested in my seat, and I'm sure there might be more than that come the filing deadline. So to pay particular attention to any one of three candidates who have expressed interest, and I would say before the filing deadline that number could grow, I don't really pay much attention to. My job is to represent the people of the 18th Congressional District. And if I do my job, elections take care of themselves. I don't waste a lot of my time worrying about what other people say who may or may not be on a ballot 8 months from now. I think my record reflects the people of Pittsburgh. I've lived in my district my entire life. I've married to my wife for 44 years and we've raised four children here. And I think I have a pretty good idea what Pittsburghers and people in the 18th Congressional District think. And I think the fact that they've sent me back as many times as they have is proof that I do reflect their hopes and dreams and their values.
You're holding a town hall next week here in Pittsburgh on climate change. This isn't your first issue-focused town hall. You talked about the Affordable Care Act in 2017. Why are you choosing issue-based town halls as opposed to more typical expected town halls where people can just come and voice their concerns or ask questions of you?
You know, when you have a town hall where you can talk just about anything, often it strays into local issues, issues that aren't really before the federal government. We're never going to be able to tackle issues like healthcare and climate change unless we can get good information out to people and at least be able to stipulate, here's the facts. You know, here's what science is telling us. I find you lose some of that focus if it's a general meeting where someone may say, you know, when are these potholes going to get fixed? Or maybe it's a state issue. So I try to focus these town hall issues on the really tough issues that are confronting the country.
You called for an impeachment inquiry to begin against President Trump back in June. And since then, a majority of your fellow House Democrats have called for an inquiry to begin as well. But it's still an issue that's really kind of divided your party. There are Democrats in more moderate districts than yours, like Connor Lamb, who have not called for any inquiry to begin. And I'm just curious, when a politician is weighing a question like impeachment, a serious question like this, to what extent should they weigh their own reelection or the broader impact of their party's future success in upcoming elections?
I really didn't think of it in a political term, like is this politically popular in my district or not? I think it's probably split here too. For me, it was a matter of, are we a nation of laws or aren't we? I wasn't originally, you know, first person to sign on to an impeachment inquiry. I wanted to see the process take its course. I wanted the committees of jurisdiction to do the job that the Constitution requires them to do on oversight. Where it changed for me is when it became obvious to me that the administration had no intentions of cooperating, telling witnesses to not honor subpoenas, refusing to hand over information, and trying to just run the clock out in the courts. And so it became apparent to me that we needed a stronger tool to enable these committees to be able to do their job. So for me, my decision to sign on to an impeachment inquiry was to give the committees of jurisdiction additional powers to be able to do their job. No president or no administration is above the law. And to tell members of your staff not to comply with subpoenas and to not hand over information, to me is the beginning of a very dangerous precedent in the country if we're not going to respect the laws of our country.
Congressman Doyle, thank you for speaking with me.
My pleasure.